All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, November 14th, 2022, business session. And I would like to call this meeting to order at 6 o'clock p.m. And roll call, please.
Director Lockham.
Here.
Director Boone.
Aye.
Director Kerfeller.
Here.
Director Carter.
Here.
Director Olson.
Here.
All right, and let's please welcome Principal McClendon to introduce our Pledge of Allegiance student. I'll leave it up to you.
Well, it is my pleasure to introduce Senior Brady Mowbray to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. So, Brady.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can I get a motion to for the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Boone.
Aye.
Director Kerfeller. Yes. Director Carter. Aye. Director Olson. Aye. All right, can I get a motion
for the approval of the minutes from the Board of Education Board Retreat October 18th, 2022?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Boone.
Aye.
Director Kerfeller.
Yes.
Director Carter.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right, can I get a motion to for the approval of the minutes from the Board of Education meeting October 24th, 2022?
So moved. Second.
All right, roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Kerfeller.
Yes.
Director Carter.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right, one more time. Can I get a motion for the approval of the minutes from the special Board of Education meeting October 26th, 2022?
So moved. Second.
Roll call, please.
Just a second. Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Kerfeller.
Yes.
Director Carter.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right. We are moving on. Thank you. We're moving on to recognitions. I can kind of hear.
That's weird.
I texted them to let them know in case it's these microphones. They can work on them still a little bit. So.
All right. So we're going to start with the recognitions, and the first one up is Bailey Barnhart, but Mr. Michael is going to
do the introduction. Can we do a little bit of a different order? We have recognition from our Pledge of Allegiance mm-hmm. student. If we could do that first.
Absolutely.
Mr. McClendon.
Sorry. And you line us up here now.
Yeah. If you guys want to come out in front.
Yeah.
Once again, this is EHS Senior Brady Mowbray. Brady is one of 16,000 semifinalists for the 68th Annual National Merit Scholarship Program, representing less than 1% of the top U.S. high school seniors. Brady ranks first in his class, has never had a grade lower than an A, nearly achieved a perfect score on the SAT, and has been an active member in many extracurricular clubs and sports. In other words, Brady is a superstar student. Congratulations.
Come on up for a picture. There you go. Oh, wait, we got a trade.
All
right,
thank you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Mom and Dad.
Yeah. All right.
Now
thank you very much.
Okay.
Brett, you're up now.
All right, my name is Brett Michael, principal of Elizabeth Middle School. It is my pleasure to recognize Bailey Barnhart. She's a leader of leaders at Elizabeth Middle School. Not only is she president of the school's chapter of National Junior Honor Society, is also a member of the Student Council, our web program, as a 4.0 student, and one of four members of our Principal Advisory Committee. So please join me in honoring Bailey Barnhart.
Mrs. Barclay. It is with great pleasure that I get to recognize Jennifer Barclay, who is a supremely talented theater teacher whose approach encourages students to become the best performers they can be, especially through the unique confidence she imbues through custom costumes that are at once stunning, functional, and comfortable. This combination of insight, skill, and passion resulted in Mrs. Barclay winning the coveted Bobby G. Award for outstanding achievement in costume design for her delightful and inspired outfitting of last year's cast of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. This is the first Bobby G. Award in the history of Elizabeth High School. So congratulations. Yeah.
Next up, it's my pleasure to honor Lisa Mullins. Lisa and her students earned the Gallery of Excellence Award for last year's Elizabeth Middle School's Glow Big or Go Home, a first for the school. Ms. Mullins, who has taught at Elizabeth for 25 years, continues to teach her students not only the basic skills of publication design, writing, and photography, but also helps them develop a critical eye for quality work that's both accurate and memorable, fitting for a book of memories. Thank you, Lisa. And so next, we'd like to honor some students of that staff, Kira Engel, Cami Ross, and Kylan Love. These were among the students guided by their teacher Lisa Mullins last year, who earned this Gallery of Excellence Award for last year's Glow Big or Go Home, a first for the school. These students learned not only the basic skills of publication design, writing and photography, but also developed that critical eye taught by Ms. Mullins. So a wonderful group to go with a wonderful teacher. So thank you all.
I just wanted to, when they invited me to this board meeting, the girls, my editors last year, were the first ones that came to mind because they were an integral part in our success, and they were so great to work with, and I'm so blessed that they all were able to make it. So thank you, girls.
If we can all fit, yes.
Thank you.
All right, for the folks that just received the recognition, the families, if they don't want to stick around for the rest of the board meeting, you're welcome to step out. We do have some exciting stuff going. So.
There are now plenty of chairs in
front. Yeah, there are chairs now up front. So, all right. That was awesome. It's terrific. All right, now, excuse me. We're going to move on to communications, and we have presenting today Schneider Electric Business Case Report. Yeah, there he is. Okay, and I'm not sure.
Will.
You're Will?
Will.
Will.
Will Benage.
All right.
Hi, guys.
And Paige.
Paige.
Okay. Hi.
It's a great setup over here. This is good.
It is. Kind of.
Is this good? Does this work? Is it good? Okay. All righty. Let us know. Is now a good time to start?
It's yours.
Perfect.
Floor is
thank
yours.
You so much. Well, thank you all again for having Paige and I here this evening. Over the last 3 or 4 months now, we've been working with Bill, Mark, and Ron over at the district and really uncovering the largest needs when it comes to, yes, building facility needs, but also ways to save district dollars. So we recently completed what we call a business case report, which is essentially a high-level analysis of what the potential scope of work could be when it comes to saving district dollars and achieving long-term capital needs. So I will say, I sometimes can just rant and keep going, so I need someone to stop me. And Bill has given me 20 or 25 minutes or so. So please, if you have any questions, just interrupt me and happy to answer them and make sure we're all on the same page moving forward. All right, do you have anything to say, Paige?
No,
he's got nothing to say. All right, let's move on. Go ahead, Chris. Thank you. So this is a brief agenda. Again, we'll talk through a lot of it. Before we do get into that content, I did want to give really a shout out to Dr. Dallas, Mark, and Ron for being super supportive of our team over the last several months. It's not, you know, such a busy school year. It's not the easiest to take hours out of your day to talk about something, especially at a high level, but I really appreciated his time. So thank you again. Feel free to jump right into it, Kristen. So if you've heard of Schneider Electric, that's wonderful. We serve different facets across, really across the globe, a lot of product servicing. But what I do here in Colorado, we serve as an energy services provider. I like to call it these capital recovery and reinvestment programs. Essentially, we look at where school districts are spending a lot of their dollars towards utilities, maintenance and operational costs, and we reinvest those into upgrading those facilities, whatever that might be, something as, as short term as perhaps switching out different lighting or working towards a greater bond initiative. We look at everything to help school districts save money through this program. I'm gonna talk a little about what that is. Outside of that though, we really do focus on how do we conceptualize this kind of work to not just teachers and board members, but also students. So we get student engagement activities involved, and I'll talk a little bit about that as well. So yeah. So where did our partnership begin? We're working with the district to, like it said, right up there, determine what those unfunded needs are, and also understand the district goals and long-term planning efforts. We know that there's a lot of change on the horizon at this school district in regards to student growth, as well as expansion, whatever that might be with potentially another school or with figuring out where everyone's going to be going. We want to be a part of that initiative. And in our business case analysis, we spent a lot of time in determining how that would actually unfold. So like it says right there, we completed a business case analysis to determine what the cost savings would be on a particular scope of work, as well as the connection between our proposed project and the district's goals. The next step is, if you imagine you're on a mountain and you're at 10,000 feet, that's where we're at with the business case analysis. To get us down to zero granular is completing an investment grade audit, which is typically a 4 to 6 month in-depth audit on determining exactly what the, you know, the energy savings, the operational savings, the cost of the work would be, and the different funding methods. We'll talk a little about that as we keep going on. Thank you. So I did mention earlier a little about strategic goals. I saw this right on your website when I first started talking to the school district. I noticed that there are a lot of different focus areas. And one in particular I really paid a lot of attention to was an efficient use of resources. The district has taken a lot of time to determine what their long-term goals would like to be, but how are we living them out? So we're trying to connect this project initiative to five specific goals that have been called out in those strategic goals. So updating the necessary facilities to foster an environment that encourages collaboration and communication, providing a safe and inviting environment through well-maintained facilities, help secure funding and support from the community, as well as applicable grants, loans, and incentives, maintain a track record of strong fiscal management, and then forging dynamic partnerships between families, educators, and the local community. So throughout our business case and in our investment grade audit, we are going to focus on these five areas particularly, and how this overlaps with a capital construction project, which you might not imagine has those kinds of connections, but they are significant, especially when you're talking about dollar savings. Feel free. Thank you. So we've been talking about this program, saving dollars through energy. What does this actually look like? This illustration, I think, embodies it pretty in a summarized way. So right now, the district on the left column there with before spends about $500,000 each year on its utilities. So electric, gas, water, right around there. And we capture 2 years of utility data with that, all thanks to Ron and his team. So thank you again. When a project is implemented, we'll tell a school district that if they make X, Y, and Z changes inside their facilities, they will save X amount of dollars each year. And over time, the district would essentially be paying for that work. And that work is covered by the amount of money that is saved each year from the school district. So you'll see on that right column there, your energy bill is lowered, your operational expenses have gone down, and the actual payment for the work is covered by the amount of savings that you'd see in your utility bills every single year for the life of a project. In the state of Colorado, this is a cost-neutral solution, and we are a pre-qualified energy services company with the Energy Office to actually perform this work. So we're the only ones that can actually measure and verify this work over the life of a project in order to, you know, determine that a school district can save a certain amount of money. So let's say in a single year, we tell Elizabeth School District they could save $150,000. And in that particular year, they save $140,000 for whatever reason. We would obviously, of course, try to figure out why that is, but also we'd write a check to cover the difference, because that's what that guarantee actually correlates itself with. So it truly is a facilities and funding solution and well supported in the state. So I'll stop there for a second. Any questions on that process and actually how that works?
So what are some of the partnerships that you mentioned, the community partnerships?
Absolutely, definitely. I'll talk about that in a few slides, but just to give you an example of this. So we recently worked with a school district out on the Western Slope. And one of the things that we started talking to them about creating community partnerships is understanding stakeholders throughout an organization, starting from maybe the Board of Education all the way down to the student. And what does that actually look like? So we hold something called stakeholder interviews, our investment grade audit. So we find stakeholders all throughout a district's organization, as well as community members. And we take time with them to understand, what are your top priorities inside of your school district? Might not have to do with any of this. What are your top needs, and how can we essentially allow a project to fund some of those needs? We bring results back to yourselves and to our leaders, and those results are profound because you hear things that do support this, but then other priorities that may not be a part of this. But at the end of it, we're able to come together and prioritize a scope of work that meets as best as we can those requirements. So that's one of the ways that we try and get community partnerships going. We've also held focus groups before with larger groups of community members, members of booster clubs, PTA, whatever that might be. We've partnered with existing contractors that school districts have, like architects and owners reps, in order to understand what are their long-term goals and projects that they're gonna be doing. Is there a bond on the horizon? Why are you working with the district right now? And we sit in on their meetings, they sit in on ours, and we collaborate because we wanna make sure that we're working toward a common goal of really improving the learning environment. So there truly is a community effort when it comes to that. I'll talk a little bit more about student engagement in a bit, but does that help answer your question a bit? Awesome. Cool. So this program we're not just switching out lights and giving you a handbook and calling it a day. It really is a customized project. Earlier today, I shared with the leadership team our business case analysis and pretty lengthy scope of work. Hey, this is everything that we investigated. Now you tell us exactly how you'd like to prioritize it. So we started to have that conversation, and in the IGA, we would really start picking and choosing what fits best, but it truly is designed around the district's business goals and sustainable cost savings, whatever that might be. We understand that, again, facilities and understanding how those are going to play a role over the next several years is important. So how can we prepare those facilities in the best way possible so the district doesn't have to worry about them 5-10 years down the road? guaranteed results. Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. You're doing great. Guaranteed results, like I mentioned earlier, these savings that we're telling you, that they are guaranteed by our team. And they're also monitored by the Colorado Energy Office. So you have a third party oversight that's making sure that Elizabeth is seeing those. So it's not just us telling you that. You have a state agency that's supporting you. One company accountability. In these comprehensive scopes of work, it's not like we're just focused on a single, you know, scope item or mechanical or renewables, whatever it might be. You don't have a bunch of contractors to point fingers on and think that you're all doing it yourself and you're handing it over to your maintenance department. We take full responsibility. We are the single source of contact throughout this entire thing, similar to like what you'd see in a general contractor. And lastly, a facilities and funding solution. So yes, I mean, we are talking about things that are energy conserving and efficient, but in a way, this really is truly a funding solution. We're finding different ways to check off big district needs, low-hanging fruit, you'd say, to ensure the district could avoid spending that. We're going to show you exactly what those numbers look like this evening. So over the next, I think, 4 or 5 slides, I'm going to go through these fairly quickly, just for the sake of time, but I know I also have this presentation for y'all afterward. But I wanted to focus on 5 key areas that typically make up the projects that we execute, but in a way, how this correlates with Elizabeth School District. So the district, again, spends about $500,000 a year, equating to about $1.40 a square foot, and we use that square foot analysis there to help compare to some other benchmarking school districts in the area, in El Paso County, in Elbert County, that we've also worked with. Based on this, the district's going to be reducing that consumption by nearly 35% with the scope of work that we are recommending. And this could translate to $175,000 that the district would no longer have to be spending each year in avoided capital costs. We think this addresses project goal number 4 of maintaining a track record of strong fiscal management. Deferred maintenance. I know if Marcos were in the room right now, he would jumping and cheering for this one. But our operations and maintenance team, they work very hard and there aren't enough of them. So essentially we don't just want to install new equipment. We also want to make their lives easier. We want to make sure that their time is prioritized effectively. And this is a huge focus of ours in regards to deferred maintenance. So we're taking on the district's top priorities, but also we're training your staff with the new equipment that's being installed. So they're not just handed things over and they have to add responsibility on their plate. They're going to have people that are supporting them from afar that can be able to, you know, ensure that they're comfortable with what's being installed and that they're prepared for it, but also takes a load off their plate. Mark's not going to have to replace hundreds of light bulbs every single year. He's going to be able to focus on other things that matter. My favorite part, the funding. So these projects, we reinvest these savings to help pay for this work. The scope of work that we're going to show in a few slides, there's a lot going on there because it's everything that we investigated. By no means are we telling the district, hey, you got to go do this in order to see this. That's not what we're saying. We want to prioritize a scope of work that finds a combination of a high return on investment. So something like lighting, changing out your old fluorescent tubes to LED, that's an immediate huge savings piece that we're going to be able to help offset other capital costs, like adding cooling to both elementary schools. So being able to find a comprehensive way of doing this is going to be able to ensure that this project is self-funded. Outside of that, we have an awesome grant consultant on our team that helps find school districts grants. And if you've been seeing what's going on in the Inflation Reduction Act and the IIJA Act, there truly is a lot of funding out there and coming to school districts over the next year or so that we're going to help Elizabeth apply for. Student engagement. This one's probably my favorite, actually. I have the privilege of working with just school districts. Our team works with cities and universities and other things. I have the privilege of working with Colorado schools and being able to connect what we're doing that might be hidden inside a boiler room or a mechanical room to students, getting them outside and understanding the importance of the work that's going on. That not just brings project awareness, but it also brings really a sense of excitement, and getting kiddos out of the classroom every once in a while is always awesome. So we have a lot of fun with different student engagement activities. I'll share some toward the end of this, but we really think this also helps with that project goal number 5 of forging those dynamic partnerships outside of really district leadership and board of directors. We're really touching on different facets of the district. Speaking of student engagement, communication, I talked a little bit this earlier in our business case analysis, but the district challenges around deferred maintenance is important, but also how we want to communicate that message to the community, especially when we're thinking long-term. Is there a bond on the horizon, a mill levy override, things that make impact when we're looking for taxpayer support? How can we leverage this project that promotes financial stewardship to our taxpayers? And this is the one of the ways that we leverage this. We have an excellent marketing team that does work with school districts directly on what are the most popular media sources and mediums that your folks and your community members look toward, and how can we help you get there? So we're aware of some of those long-term planning goals that the district has, and we want to be a part of that. So we want to leverage communication the best way we can. So if you can see this, excellent. If not, maybe it's on your screen, but this is the proposed scope of work that we, this is the proposed scope of work that was in our business case analysis, and there's a lot going on here. I'm going to let Paige talk through some of it, but he's going to keep it very high level. One thing I'll say before he gets going there, you'll see the color coding. The solution's colored in green. We call it our base project. Essentially, it's the scope of work that has a very high return on its investment, so things that will pay for themselves over time in its entirety, things that will help fund other big needs, such as the things that are highlighted in blue, which are more capital intensive, cost more dollars, don't generate energy savings directly. So I'll let Paige add on to that real quick.
Yeah, thanks, Will. I won't spend too much time on this. It's a lot of color squares, I know, but.
It's color squares.
I'm a project development engineer, so I work alongside Will to investigate the facilities and take a look at your buildings to see what the major needs are. And we walked last month with Mark and his team and looked at all your facilities. And this is just a summary of everything we saw, the things that are potentially part of a project, most of which drive energy or utility savings. So we have lighting, interior, exterior lighting, upgrading to LED, building automation, which is the control system that operates the HVAC and other systems. There's a lot of opportunity there. The middle school doesn't even have a control system in place, so a lot of savings potential at the middle school. Water is an area the district's doing really well on. There's not a lot of water spend in Elizabeth, but there's always opportunity to improve, like high flow fixtures and some things to reduce your water billing. And then there's some safety and security pieces, which we've done vestibule upgrades at other districts, and that's something that a lot of districts are focused on, reinvesting some of these saved energy dollars into security measures. So that's something we can look at. Building envelope is sealing and making the building more efficient with insulation and preventing air infiltration. Mechanical, HVAC, there's a lot of opportunities to upgrade old, original HVAC units at every campus. And then there's also some future-proofing we could do, installing electric charging infrastructure or doing some backup generators for schools that require it for critical power. And there's also opportunities if you're interested in solar, other renewable type programs, which often come with funding, grant funding. And then our last section under other is kind of our ongoing way that Schneider Electric maintains and trains and provides support for the district when the project is done. So we'll talk about some of these other measures. We'll probably circle back on a couple of these, but I just wanted to give you an overview. There's a lot that we can do.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Paige. And Paige spent a lot of time developing the scope of work. And at the end of that business case report, I think I have a few copies out there. He writes out the supplemental documentation that sort of shares how we got to our analysis. I'll go to the financial highlights slide. Yes. So a lot going on here as well. I'll start on the top left there. So I mentioned this a bit earlier. Based on the scope of work, really the primary scope of work highlighted in green, the district does have that range of projected first year annual savings. So anywhere between $135,000 and $175,000. And right below that, where we have total life cycle savings, these projects typically last 20 years or longer in that life cycle because it's based on the weighted average useful life of the equipment that's actually being installed, which typically surpasses that 20 years. But in regards to these projects, we typically see a length of that long. And the district could capture just over $5 million in that time that we can help use to fund not just that scope of work, but other big ticket needs. The different funding mechanisms there at the bottom left there, something called the tax exempt lease purchase agreement. This is the main funding vehicle. It's a form of financing. So I showed you that illustration on the one of the first slides there. I mentioned on the second side there is that payments thing highlighted in blue there with the guaranteed savings. Since these projects are typically financed over time, let's say over a 20-year term, every year a district would make an annual payment back to the lender to pay off that equipment. The savings cover the cost of that annual payment to pay off the financing in its entirety. So throughout the life of the project, you'll see that cost-neutral solution with it. Outside of that main funding vehicle, we look at utility rebates, specifically with Xcel Energy. We know the district leverages. And like I mentioned at the bottom there, there are a ton of grants that are going to be coming out over the next several months supporting these projects, which is wonderful. We want to find more funding to take care of these capital needs. So on the right side there, I won't go through them right now, but essentially a more comprehensive solution checklist of the things that were supported in the scope of work. We're going to investigate that in the investment grade audit. I have a nice little pie chart graphic on the right side there, but looking at nearly 35% of your utility costs reinvested every single year, it's a significant amount of money. And I put that on the bottom right side there. So the district would be spending this money anyway, even if it didn't pursue this kind of program. But what could the district do if it did measure every single year $175,000 that they would no longer have to be spending? Where could that go inside of your general fund? So I listed out some things that I typically hear at the bottom there. But really, at the end of the day, you know, how can we spend these dollars most effectively and reduce that consumption in the interim? So I wanted to share a single slide that actually just dives into five critical measures of scope that we think correlates very well with where the district is seeing some of its biggest priorities. We know the lack of cooling at both of the elementary schools is starting to become something where it needs to be addressed. Whether that's a full cooling retrofit in the entire schools are cooled, or some sort of temporary cooling solution until a larger capital bond can be passed. But at the end of the day, finding a solution there in the investment grade audit, we're going to have a solution for the district to investigate in order to make sure that those schools are prepared over the next several years for cooling, depending on how long those schools want to be up. That is our priority number one. LED installation, the reason I have that on there, not just, of course, of the benefit that comes to having LED lights in a room like this, but also the cost savings. This will be the largest amount of savings that the district will see to help pay for things like that cooling solution. The implementing of the building automation system, understanding how HVAC and technology are interacting with one another. This will be an area that also has a high savings potential, so we wanted to make sure it was focused on. And like Paige mentioned, there is no current platform at the middle school. It's just set points. And whether or not that's something that's accepted, it's an area that we want to investigate to determine if we create more absolute cooling and heating that works there. Implementing safety and security measures. This is not an energy saver by any means, but we've leveraged energy savings to help pay for security vestibules, cameras, also use grants to fund that work. At Lewis Palmer School District down the road, we worked with them last year and funded 3 security vestibules just with energy and operational savings at 3 of their really prioritized schools that needed that. And they look wonderful. So really just an area that we would like to investigate further at those specific schools. And lastly, for Mark, training O&M staff for preventative maintenance, making sure that we can reduce that workload so they can be able to focus on things that really do matter. How are we doing on time? Another minute or so? 1 minute. Awesome. I'll skip through these references. I just talked about LP. Something I just like tossing in here, our marketing communications team spends a ton of time with school districts on customizing a project that they would like to see, whether or not that has to do with building relationships, being green, or it means saving dollars and promoting financial stewardship. There are different areas that we will investigate to make sure that's shown there. Just a few more examples shown there. Some student engagement activities. Some of my favorites include solar car race. Can we bring students outside? And we turn it into a March Madness bracket. It gets very heated, but it's a lot of fun. Last week, we hosted our second annual Students in STEAM event, where we brought students to Colorado Springs and in El Paso County. We're able to go to the Discovery Science Center and had a full free day for students from all across the state to be able to enjoy STEM education, brought in speakers from NASA, Ball Aerospace. They were great. Really just getting students involved, we think, is extremely important. We want to make that an emphasis here as well. Last thing I'll say, some ongoing programs to help monitor and manage the energy savings that are there outside of the Colorado Energy Office. Don't have to get into detail on that right now, but yep. And lastly, I think this should be it. One more? Yes, okay, timeline, yes. So we are here right now. Today is November 14th, I can't keep track. We would like to come back on December 12th to be able to move our investment grade audit forward with the board's support. This essentially means that there is a contract where up to this time, the district has not paid for anything for the work that we've done. This has all been our investigation to determine this. We would come back on December 12th and essentially lay out exactly what this investment grade audit looks like. And at the end of that investment grade audit, we hand you a report. And it's this big giant textbook, and it has a lot of information in it. And if you like it, we would execute it and move it into construction. There are occasions where school districts receive that IGA report, and they essentially say, thank you, but we're not interested in moving forward at this time. If that is the case, there is a fee that Elizabeth would pay Schneider, whoever might be doing that work, and for the time, resources, and labor leading up to that investment grade audit report. I would say I've never seen a project not move forward in that regard. Typically, at that point, we would have figured out if there's any miscommunication going on that front. But I do want to make sure that in that IGA contract, that is something that is highlighted. And that fee is not determined by Schneider. It's determined by the Colorado Energy Office. And I did give it to Bill last week, so he's more than welcome to share with you all. But let's say we do move forward. So we'd get into the IGA. That would go from January to most likely June. We would execute and implement this larger project, and we would hopefully want to be able to move into construction later in 2023, implement things that are going to generate savings immediately, like the lighting that the district can capture. And then when it's time to prepare for the cooling solution, we would get in there probably summer 2024. And yeah, as project continues, we'll have support for the district. So I know I'm way over. I really appreciate all your time, and I'm talking fast. Do I have time for any questions, or probably not? If anyone...
That's very good.
Okay.
Very good.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'd like to thank Will and Paige. They've spent, and also Ron Patera and Mark Oser. They've spent a lot of time together trying to evaluate whether or not this is something. This moved through phases, like the early phase where we talked conceptual, and then and Ron's office and Tina collecting 2 years worth of utility data to then decide, okay, maybe there's something here, to then having Paige and Mark walk all of our facilities to look at, okay, is there something here? And so really appreciate all the work that they've put in to get us to this point. As Will said, you know, this is their investment in the process at this point in time. And so I wanted to give the board an opportunity to digest what Will and Paige shared with us today, and give you time between now and our December meeting before asking for any future direction from the board. I do apologize that the presentation made it into your board packet a little bit late. We received it today, so it is in the communication section of your board packet. But I think it's clear that there's some significant savings that could happen as a result of reinvesting in money that right now we're spending in energy that potentially could go towards our deferred maintenance. And we have quite a bit of deferred maintenance, as do all school districts. So really, it's just whether or not this is the right direction for the school district at this point in time. And so I plan to bring it back to you all in December for you to weigh in and have some conversation as to whether or not you would like us to proceed further with the IGA, or whether or not you'd like us to revisit this at another later point in time. So thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Auditor presentation, Ron and... You want to come? You're on.
I think it's me.
And please introduce yourself.
My name is Jim Hinkle with Hinkle & Company CPAs out of Denver, and we did the annual audit of the financial statements for the year ending June 30, 2022. We started off our audit by looking at the school district's internal accounting controls. Primarily, we're looking for a segregation of duties. An accounting transaction typically takes three steps: initiation, authorization, and recording. And we want more than one person involved in that process so that there are more than at least two people looking at each transaction. We also then identify the control features of the internal controls. And throughout our entire audit, we are verifying that those control features are operating as intended. Approvals of invoices before they're paid, proper accounting coding on the invoices as those are expensed, and things of that nature. We do that for a couple of reasons. First is we are looking for what we call a significant deficiency or a material weakness in the internal controls. And those are terms of art. A significant deficiency is defined as a design flaw in the system of internal controls that would allow an error to go undetected in the ordinary course of business. And a material weakness is a significant deficiency that could result in a material misstatement of the financial statements. And based upon our analysis and all of our audit procedures, we did not find any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the internal control structure. That's the answer that you want to hear. That also allows us then to assess the audit risks of the financial statements and for us to design our auditing tests on the actual statements. We primarily use test of details, which is pretty much what it sounds like. We drill down into account balances and we look at the underlying transactions and we verify those with supporting documentations, invoices, cash receipts, contracts, agreements, and things of that nature. We also use analytic review, where we look at revenues and expenses to last year, to budget. We compare certain balance sheet items to income statement items like accounts receivables to revenues and such. And we're looking for relationships that we either don't expect or can't explain, and then we do more test of details. The end result of that is our audit report, and your audit report is an unmodified report, which in layman's term is a clean opinion. If anybody happens to drill down close enough and look at it, it is different than last year's. About every 20 years or so, the AICPA decides that they need to update the standard audit opinion. Usually it adds a couple more paragraphs to it, and this was the year for the update. But I assure you, it still is the same unmodified or claim opinion that you have got or received in the last several years as well. You know, it looks different. Once we're done with that, we move into what we call our single audit, and that is that the external auditors are required to test compliance with federal awards, and we issue two opinions with respect to federal awards. The first is what is referred to as in compliance with government auditing standards, and it looks at the district as a whole and basically ask the question, does the district have the internal controls in place to determine what federal awards it participates in and what compliance requirements each of those federal awards has? And if we find any instances of noncompliance on any federal award program throughout our entire audit, we're required to disclose that noncompliance in this first report. And based upon all of our work throughout the audit, you also received an unmodified or clean opinion with respect to that opinion. And so there are no issues of noncompliance, and the district does have the internal controls to determine what federal programs it is required to participate in. The last report is what we refer to is in compliance with uniform guidance, which we're required to test specific programs that under the federal guidelines are defined as major programs. And this year we tested the nutrition program and the ESSER program, which is the COVID relief money. And again, we issued an unmodified or clean opinion with those specific, with relationship to those specific programs. The district has the internal controls in place to ensure compliance with the compliance standards. And throughout our specific testing of those two programs, we did not have any instances of non-compliance with those two federal programs. And we test those in detail. All in all, it was a clean opinion, a good audit. The one thing of note with respect to the financial statements that would be of note is that the state of Colorado has restarted its annual contribution to PARA from the legislature. It skipped last year because of COVID. And we are slowly moving toward a more closely fully funded PARA, which is starting to bring down those pension and OPEB liability numbers that have been on all of the school districts' financial statements. We've still got pretty big numbers there, but at least they're moving in the right direction, and the state legislature has come back and started making its $125 million contribution to the PARA trusts like they intended to all along. Once we issue our final report and the draft is accepted, we will issue a required communication letter that we are required to communicate in writing if certain events occur during the course of the audit. And we have nothing to communicate. We did not have any difficulties in the audit. We did not have any disagreements with management. We did not make any audit adjustments to the numbers on the books and records in creating the financial statements. And so it's a clean letter with nothing to communicate. And finally, what I think is probably the most important thing to communicate is that we as auditors felt like we had open transparency throughout the entire audit process. Everything that we asked for, we were provided for in a timely fashion. We were never denied access to any information or documents. And so we felt like we were able to ask whatever we needed to in order to perform our standards, our auditing standards, and audit the financial statements. So I think that's very good. And Ron, I'd like to thank you and your staff. We are an addition to their daily jobs. We ask a lot of questions. We ask for a lot of documents. And everything was provided to us in a very timely fashion. So thank you and your staff for being so responsive to our requests and our needs. Any questions? Pretty straightforward. Pretty good audit. Clean opinions all the way around.
Terrific.
Thank you very much,
Jeff. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Ron.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Ron.
You can just do the work.
All right. Very good. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Next up, we have our education showcase with the elementary school counselors. So I'm not sure who's on first. Oh, who's on second? Right. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening. I am Kelly Tarr. I'm the school counselor for Running Creek Elementary School, for those of you that don't know me. And I'm also the lead counselor for the district. I'm really grateful tonight to be able to speak with you all. The district school counseling team really wants to clarify any false narratives that are going around Elizabeth and help everybody feel more comfortable and at ease with what our job really entails. Although our primary job as a school district is to address academics, we can't deny the fact that educators are responsible for so much more. We are currently experiencing an epidemic, and it's a mental health crisis. Children's Hospital Colorado declared a state of emergency for pediatric mental health in 2021. It's a first in our more than 110-year history. The hospitals continue to be flooded with kids suffering mental health crises. Self-harm or suicide attempts are among the top reasons that patients seek mental health care in the emergency departments. The statistics are staggering, and Children's Hospital says the problem is simply too large and too complicated for any one institution to handle alone. Our counselors and mental health providers at Elizabeth School District are working so hard to do everything we can to respond to and support students, staff, administrators, parents, teachers, and each other, but the problem is so large and we feel like we're in a triage situation. Our caseloads are out of proportion. It's recommended that we have 250 students to every one counselor, and we all have more than 350 students on our caseloads. The needs of these students are also great. We are constantly managing threat assessments, suicide risk assessments, crisis response situations, meltdowns. Sometimes they last for short periods of time. Sometimes these can be hours. Parent communication and collaboration, staff support. We're dealing with teachers every single day with different behavior challenges. We're daily supporting our administrators. We deal with transportation issues. We get creative and we find resources for our hungry, homeless, and struggling students and families. We run small groups, we meet with large groups, we help with peer mediation, and we meet students one-on-one. We've also created a district attendance review board, and that's a process for students with significant chronic attendance issues, which I presented at our state conference. Jobs in education are difficult, and that's an understatement, and they come with unique challenges. On our best days, I question what I do, I plan for tomorrow, although often my well-intended plans get derailed. We critique ourselves constantly about the work we've done and the work we have yet to do. We care so much for our students that we lose sleep at night. We weep for their struggles. I scour for more resources and try to get creative and collaborate with parents and work together as an educational team. We're questioned and unsupported. When that happens, it makes this job really difficult. A day in the life of me. I show up to work every day with the best laid plan, but I'll tell you, truly, it's just a suggestion. Most days, things show up that I didn't even plan for, and I have to be adaptable and ready to pivot. Today was actually one of those days. This month alone, and it's only halfway through the month, I've dealt with 5 challenging custody issues, conducted multiple peer mediation situations. I found resources and able to put money in students' lunch accounts where lunch is their only meal of the day. I have worked with and thanked parents for providing donated snacks for our students that are hungry. I've given out donated food bags on Fridays to families that need supplemental food over the weekends. I found free propane for a family that's living in a camper. I've supported our homeless students with coats, hats, and mittens as the cold weather comes in. I've conducted 2 self-harm screeners. I've done a suicide assessment today, and I've worked on finding donors for the holidays for the students that need holiday support. I've made 4 Department of Social Services reports this month for neglect and abuse. I've attended multiple response to intervention meetings to help students support students with academic and emotional needs, and parents are part of those teams. I've coordinated with our watchdog dads to help them with their volunteer hours. I've conducted classroom lessons. Using compassion and empathy, I've supported many meltdowns in order to help students get back to their baseline so they can actually get back to learning. I've responded to teachers for crisis response situations and collaborated with many different parents to help their students in the best way I can. I've also guided my student ambassadors to write introductions for our Leader in Me assembly this week, and I've helped them with our coin drive. I'm working with 4 different students on grief workbooks due to the loss of a family member. I'm the 504 coordinator. I'm the watchdog coordinator. I work on the crisis team, and I support my administrator daily. It's important to understand the benefit of school counselors being consistent and staying with a district. A teacher gets a new set of students every single year, but a counselor knows their families for years. I know my students for 5 to 8 years. This really helps me know their specific needs, and it helps me advocate and communicate with the next level when they move on. During my time in Elizabeth, I've worked with 3 different superintendents. I've supported 3 different principals at Running Creek. I've helped with induction of our new counselors in the district. I've assisted multiple counselors at each building, and I've been on call and responded to crisis situations at each building to include Legacy Academy. We have dedicated, hard-working school counselors in this district. I'm so proud of my Elizabeth School District colleagues. And as a school counselor, we know that our days are not predictable. It's constantly changing, and we have to be ready for everything. It's a challenging job that's always evolving, but our students make it worth it. I really appreciate you hearing about my role as a school counselor. And now Connie is going to join us.
All right, so I have a slideshow to share with you guys. I'm Connie. I'm from the Singing Hills Elementary. I'm the counselor over there. And with everything, to speak to everything Kelly just went over, if you can flip to the second slide, we're recommended to have 250 students to 1 counselor. Kelly at Running Creek has 377 to 1 counselor. I have 495, and the numbers are pretty close for our middle school and high school. It should be closer to 250. We do 504 coordination. That's part of the Americans with Disabilities Act. If a kiddo has any kind of disability, they are entitled to some accommodations. It's not special education. It's a little bit different than that. This is just accommodations, not services. And we also are the coordinators for that. So we handle that, case management and meetings for the kids, making sure all of those are rolled out with fidelity and everyone's following the plan. Thank you. Suicide and threat assessments. Our numbers are here just so far this school year. In the 2 elementaries, we've done 7 suicide screeners, 5 suicide risk assessments, 5 threat assessment screeners, and thank goodness, no threat assessments. We have, we've actively have kids that are suicidal, sometimes on a weekly basis, and we have to arrange safety plans for them to return to the district and be safe because we're responsible for their little lives. We're also responsible for our staff safety and making sure everyone comes away in a safe place. And to speak to the shortage of mental health providers, I've got one kiddo right now that needs inpatient treatment, but there's a wait list because there's not enough mental health providers in Children's Hospital and a lot of the other providers. They just don't have staff to cover the beds. Thank you very much. School safety, Kelly mentioned also we're part of the school safety team. So we have kind of an upward flow of all this information with risk and suicide assessments because we need to make sure that we're passing that on to the middle school and to the high school. We try to protect our kiddos' privacy and any integrity, but we do have an obligation to keep everybody safe. So that means we communicate upwards on a daily basis, back and forth, information, what's happening. If something comes through safe to tell, that'll land on us to try to investigate and find out what's going on. And then how we work with kids, Kelly spoke to this as well. We work with them on an individual basis. Right now I've got kids with trauma, I know you do as well. Anxiety's huge. Attention, behavior, you know, some of these guys can't sit still all day. It's a struggle. So if we can give them little breaks or anything we can do to help. Grief, I've got several that have lost loved ones to suicide or through COVID. That's a big one right now. And then just crisis intervention. Maybe there's a crisis at the home and they might need emergency shelter, emergency food, clothing. We handle all of that. We also do some smaller group where we might do like a lunch bunch and have maybe four or five come. And we'll work on conflict resolution, personal space, social skills. There's a lot of divorce. That's always tough. Organization, classroom lessons, we do some of those. We try to focus on anti-bullying, just so all the kids are respectful of each other and treating each other with kindness. Sometimes it helps to go over how to be academically prepared and get organized and get those grades and assignments in. And all of everything I've got listed under classroom lessons speaks back to everything that we do in the district for kids. We want them to be empathetic and collaborative, adaptable and resilient, effective communicators, independent learners, and entrepreneurs. That's what we're shooting for all the kiddos. Thank you. We also support teachers and staff. That could be kind of like the picture on the left. If there's an issue on the playground with the lunch lady, we're out there trying to solve the problem. If maybe there's a little bit of a conflict between a teacher and a kiddo, we try to get in there and enrich that relationship and build it a little bit. And we also try to work with teachers. You know, they're stressed too. I think almost everybody in this district probably has a side hustle. We don't get paid a whole lot. So a lot of us are juggling, and sometimes we need resources too. We might need help with, you know, supplementary food once in a while, Christmas gifts. I've been there. We all have. So we work with teachers on that as well. Thank you. And then these are some of our community partners. Elizabeth Fire Department, they have a foundation that will help people out with, right now there's a car sitting at DB Speed that needs to be repaired. Stuff like that that families need and maybe can't afford. They'll help them with utility bills, you know, anything that they need. C-Core and Pinecrest provide weekly supplementary food bags. I know Kelly has more than I do. And we deliver those each week to the kids. And it's just supplementary food for a meal or two over the weekend. It's all non-perishable, canned goods kind of stuff. And then they can hook up to the food banks through us. And the food bank, sometimes the windows are closed or really close and the parents can't get there. So I don't know if you do, but I run down to that food bank a lot and bring it back so the kids can get it home or the parents can come and get it by 3:30. And then we also do a lot of snacks too. I know most of us in the district here have a stash of snacks. We spend our own money on that or we get some from the food bank. Just wanted to let you guys know kind of what we do with our kids on a daily basis, and I appreciate your time tonight. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have you questions? No questions. I'm just blown away. The hard work and I had no idea that to that extent of what you guys do. So thank you, because I our kids need it, and I'm just totally impressed. So thank you very much, you guys. I appreciate it. So give it up again. All right, next up, we got Mr. Ron Patera. And Ron, thank you for coming to the meeting today.
Thank you.
It's a
Just for, you know, 4 short hours ago, I was just driving home from Fort Logan, putting my
father
in, yeah, you know, his final resting place. So
yeah, so thank you for sure. for coming in, and my condolences are, yeah, you know, for your father.
Yay, checks over $5,000. You had your normal expenditures, such as the food supplies, fuel, utilities, workers' comp, charter flow through, plus the following. Additionally, payments for outside SPED services, out-of-district tuition for SPED student, technology and safety hardware, consultant services related to gear grant, VOTEC tuition, athletic software, concrete for playground, superintendent search firm services, enrollment projections, modular rent, alarm repair and monitoring services, sixth grade outdoor ed, sports equipment, freezer repair, irrigation pump replacement, district radios, and football headsets. Any questions or anything there? Okay. Moving on to the financial statements. These statements reflect financial activity through the end of September, 25% through the fiscal year. Revenues after allocation to charter school are at 22.8% as a percentage of the general fund budget, while expenditures are at 23.47% as a percentage of the budget. There are several cost centers over the 25% benchmark. Some are due to large one-time expenditures, such as insurance premiums or expenses that are actually payables that will be reflected in last year's financial statements. And some are due to capital projects that were completed early in the fiscal year. Are there any questions related to the financial statements? One thing I do need to, that I need to make you aware of, not to be, you know, super concerned, but to be aware of, as you notice throughout the checks over $5,000, there are quite a few, or there were several payments for outside services for students. As we just pointed out, we're getting more and more students that are needing some of these higher needs, and so we might have to send them sometimes outside. Or we cannot find staff members who are actually on our payroll to address their needs, and so we have to go out to outside agencies and get their services, and they charge more than what an hourly employee would. So it's not that there's not enough hourly employees out there for this market. They are in such high demand, very high demand. And so that's why you're going to notice some of these expenses on here, and just be aware of them. All right? Okay. Thank you.
Ron, thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. Bill, you're on.
Yeah, thank you. So a couple of upcoming dates that are pretty important, obviously. Upcoming, we have schools closed during the week of November 21st through the 25th in observance of Thanksgiving break. And most of the district offices will likely be closed on the 24th and the 25th in observance of Thanksgiving as well. December 2nd is an important day in education because it's a national day to recognize students with special education needs. We do tend to have many students across education that have some significant needs and work through quite a bit of challenges in order to academically perform at the same level as their other grade level peers. So just wanted to point out a couple of those important upcoming dates. We have had a few legislative updates. We'll have to see where things land with the Joint Budget Committee and the long bill around school finance. But right now there is proposals to look at increasing the per pupil spending by about 9%, which what that would equate to is about $861 per student. Now, we're a long way from anything being voted on, so like I would caution people not to get their hopes too high on this, but just kind of outlining a few of those. Another $35 million to buying down the budget stabilization factor. Some people know it as the BS factor, some people know it as the negative factor. There's proposals for increases to special education funding, which I think we've seen just from today alone We know special education is underfunded in our profession, and we know that we need to support schools with the added costs of supporting our special education students. So last I saw, there was roughly $29 million increase proposed to special education funding, about an $8.4 million increase to safety measures, school safety measures. That is a combination of things such as grants for physical safety improvements, some additional funding to support training and threat assessments, which, as you've seen from our elementary school counselors, we do indeed engage in threat assessments and suicide risk assessments. And there's some money to create a new Office of School Safety at the state level. So there's a lot in there in terms of funding. You know, the legislation will obviously have to find that funding and, determine whether or not they're going to be able to afford these things. But when we're looking at a cost of living that is, very high at this point in time and inflation very high, we know that that is impacting everything on our end, from utilities to transportation. We've heard about difficulties finding staff members. So it would be nice to see if we can even begin to approach some of these numbers when it comes time to the legislation ratifying the 23-24 school finance. So I'll pause for that one in case there's any questions related to school finance. Again, we're a long way from a finish line, but at least it starts to paint a picture. Okay. We also know that Proposition FF passed, creating a healthy schools meal for all programs, to reimburse participating schools for free meals to students and provide schools with food-related funding. I've been asked if that's going to go into effect as early as January, and it will not. This is more for the 2023-2024 school year, and I think there's a lot of rulemaking that's still going to need to come from it, but we'll pay attention to that and provide the board with any further updates that we might have as we start to obtain some more information. But those are the two major legislative updates that we have that, directly impact schools. So, okay. In regards to a couple of updates, as the board is well aware, Mr. Patera and I have engaged in evaluating some master plan, long-range facilities master plan opportunities to provide guidance to the board. And so Mr. Patera put in place a request for a proposal, an RFP. We did receive six different companies that were interested in bidding for that and filling that role. We went through a series of mechanisms to reduce that down to based upon qualifications and how they responded to the specific needs. One of those specific needs was to, I would say the most important specific needs were helping us to reevaluate enrollment projections and potential long-range planning around enrollment, helping us to go back and take a look at some of the structural changes that we've made in some of our buildings that will impact capacity in those buildings. I think the middle school is one in particular, that some of the structural changes that were made within the building to help spread kids out also probably decrease the capacity in those buildings, and that was as a result of a COVID measure. So helping us to understand long range and continuing to evolve our enrollment projections, reevaluating our capacities in our buildings, and then really helping us to understand with all that information, what is the soonest we might need to have a conversation around our current school's abilities to meet the enrollment needs of our students. And if we do need to make a change, what is that change and when would we start to need to look at that change? So those were the major components, not to confuse with what Schneider Electric was doing, where they were looking at existing infrastructure needs that could we could potentially try to fund some of those unfunded delayed facilities needs by capitalizing on some energy savings. They're two very different focuses, but to me, it's exciting that it's happening at the same time because there's a lot of opportunity to overlap that work. And so, and one can help to inform the other. And so based upon those evaluation processes, Mr. Patera invited two finalists to come back and present to myself, Mr. Hackett, and Mr. Patera. And based upon those presentations, at this point in time, we've chosen to select RTA Architects as the sole
recommendation to the board to build out the Elizabeth School District's long-range facilities master plan. RTA has extensive experience planning and assessing school facilities, having recently completed district-wide master plans and or facilities assessments with Platte Canyon School District, Strasburg School District, Montrose School District, Lewis Palmer School District, Academy District 20, for example. RTA has experience engaging communities, focusing efforts on what is needed to best support students, and also has experience with both best grant writing and supporting ballot initiatives if the board were to so decide to go forward. So it will be my intent to bring a measure to the board in the December 12th meeting to seek approval to enter into a contract with RTA Architects to facilitate the long-range strategic planning for the district. And prior to that, we'll provide you with the updated information that they had provided, including their bid for the RFP, the documentation with their specific presentation to our school district, and also with the financials and with the contract to evaluate, so that you can make a decision as to whether or not to move forward with this for our next steps. So
are they coming and doing a presentation in December, or
they will be present in December?
Okay.
Yes.
And are we voting on it at the December meeting? Is that the plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Taking a look in your board packet, you have our annual class size report. I want to be really cautious here not to confuse the annual class size report with the October report that you have in the action item. And the reason I want to do that is because the October count submission is still embargoed data. It is embargoed until January 10th. So we're not able to discuss the specifics of the January count until after, January 10th. So please don't confuse that with the annual class size report. The annual class size report is an internal control mechanism that we have here at Elizabeth School District to make sure as though we're kind of paying attention to those classes. I'm not going to go through it in its entirety. I'm just going to kind of highlight that we really, in kindergarten, we're ideally looking for that 24-to-1 target for students to teacher ratio. In our first grade through third grade, 25-to-1 is kind of our sweet spot. Fourth grade to sixth grade, we're trying not to go past 28-to-1. And in our secondary schools, seventh grade through 12th, we're really trying to keep it no higher than that 30-to-1 ratio. You will see at Elizabeth High School, there's a couple of classes that are exceed that 30-to-1 ratio. For the most part, I'm not overwhelmingly concerned about these at this point in time. As you might be aware, at the secondary level, there's a lot of factors that go into class sizes. What other classes are available during that period? What's the total interest in the program? And some programs, in some cases, some performing programs, it's actually a little bit beneficial to maybe surpass, if you have the room and the teacher, to surpass that 30-to-1 ratio when you're talking about performances that will then later happen throughout the year. So I think what's important to take a look at is that all core class sizes at the high school are well below the threshold. When we take a look at Elizabeth Middle School, we see some similar class sizes that kind of go above that 30-to-1 ratio, just like the high school. Again, when we're focusing in on secondary school schedules, if you want to take this class and it's only offered this one time, then that can have a ripple effect on what other classes end up seeing some slightly higher numbers as well. And so I think that at the middle school, it's definitely numbers we want to try to pay attention to and really keep our eye on. But at this point in time, I think the middle school is doing everything that they can to make sure as though we keep those class sizes as close to the preferred student-to-teacher ratio as we would want. And then both at Running Creek and Singing Hills Elementary School, you'll see that both are well below our thresholds that I indicated in with our ideal student-to-teacher ratios. I think our biggest concern here remains some oddly shaped classrooms that limit class sizes, particularly in Running Creek Elementary School, and then as we all are aware, the lack of AC at both the sites and the impact that that has to having multiple bodies in a room producing additional heat and smelliness at times. So lastly, I'll point out that we do have, we are in the second week of our parent climate survey that we have asked parents to fill out at all of our schools. I'm gonna be meeting with principals tomorrow and be asking them to send out a reminder email on Wednesday. We're currently sitting at roughly 23% response rate as of about 5 hours ago at our high school, about a 31% response rate at our middle school, about a 30% response rate at Running Creek, and about a 23% response rate at Singing Hills. So we've got a good response rate, but we'd like to get as close to that 50% as we possibly can. So we'll see another email go out from principals, hopefully on Wednesday. And that's all I have for my report, unless anyone has any questions.
Any questions for Bill?
No.
All right, we're going to move on to the public comment section, and I have something to read before we get started on that. During the Board of Education session, time will be provided on the agenda during public participation for members of the community to speak to the board on items of interest or concern that do not appear elsewhere on the agenda. It is the Board of Education's practice not to hear in public session complaints against district personnel. In addition, it's a violation of federal law to discuss in public or elsewhere individual student issues, Family Education Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA. In an effort to avoid undue repetition and keep within the time frame of the agenda, the board asks that speakers who have come to express similar opinions on a particular topic designate a spokesperson for the group. Questions or comments requiring feedback will be referred to the superintendent for consideration and a later response. Each person addressing the board will have 3 minutes to present his or her views. We will ask you to wrap up as you get near the end of the allotted time, three-minute time. The boundaries are designed to help keep the meeting focused. So we have a new tool here that I can't see, but it'll start kind of beeping for us and everything. So so we have a few. So I'm going to start in the order of which they were received. And first up is Robert Rowland. Just stand up at the podium. And Kristen is our hall monitor, so she'll...
well, okay. That's where the hook will come from.
Yeah.
Thank you for providing this. I appreciate the opportunity. I want to first of all say that I didn't script. This is my second meeting, and I'm very enlightened and impressed with a lot of the information that we've received tonight and some of the things that you're all doing. I had two subjects I was going to talk about. I'm gonna forego one tonight because I wanted to make it clear that I think there's a lot of people like myself that are very interested in being a positive force and a positive influence. But with that positive influence and our desire to be involved with our children, I have two guardian grandchildren in this system now, and one that's already graduated. I've been here 25 years, and so I have some. I consider myself a stakeholder. But I have one issue that I want to talk to you about, and that is public comment in meetings. And here I am, and this is good. But I want to make sure that I convey to you, I think the importance, the critical importance of allowing and getting the input of all of the people in this district, stakeholders, voters, taxpayers, and whatever. State statute, if you look at CRS 246401, does not require public meetings to have public comment. That's fact. That a lot of folks were surprised with that. But I want to just say and ask that you give consideration for doing that as often as possible. I know you have business meetings and working meetings. But the information that I think a lot of folks in this community have, and there's a lot of people interested in helping and being positive, is important for you to hear, not just because we want to say it and stand here and make trouble. It's to make decisions that represent the community as a whole. There's a lot of good ideas out there, and nobody, you know, on the board or anywhere else has those exclusive ideas. And as long as we all work together and do that in a positive way, I'd ask you to just to try to be open and reconsider, if you would, allowing public comment as often as possible and give us more avenues to make that public comment. Maybe not just standing here. Not everybody likes to do this. But, you know, give us a format for a response if there's a common concern or a common idea that you get through from us, whether it be in writing or emails and or in these kind of meetings, I think one of the things I hear and one of the things I think is really important that the folks like me get feedback and know that we're being heard. Doesn't mean you have to agree with us. Doesn't mean that we're going to be right and our idea is a good one. It does mean that we want to be part of the solution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, me too. Yeah. All right, Mary Powell is up next.
All right, well, as you said, I'm Mary Powell. Robert, you stole a little bit of my thunder, I have to say, but I am a paralegal by training, and I've looked at documents, drafted documents, did all sorts of things like that. And so from that standpoint, I had emailed you, Dr. Davis, and all of the board members about a little over a week ago with some edits to four of the policies that you talked about, I think, at the 1024 working session meeting. And I took your red lines and I kind of made my own little form of red line to add some additional comments. One of them, I was by no means going to go through all that tonight, but I did want to just kind of put it on the record that I had sent you that, and I am hoping and assuming that you'll be looking at those at your next working session. But one of them was the public comment, and so I'm going to agree with Robert that I really think that's important. We do have this all the time, I know, at availability during a business session, but I really do feel it is important to have them during working sessions too. And I know there's a concern about, you know, making those meetings too long, and I get that, but perhaps a solution to that would be to limit it to maybe the first five people who come. I don't really think that you're going to have that many comments normally. You kind of indicated that at that last meeting, that there aren't that many times that people do public comment. But as Robert was kind of saying, it would be great to have maybe some other ways that we can do that. Submit them in a written format. Or I think maybe people need to understand that they can do what I did, and that's write up some stuff and email to y'all so that it's kind of in front of you and you can address it during a working session. The other reason I think having comment at a working session might give a little bit of efficiencies to hear from the people in the community, especially when you're talking documents, you're talking edits to things. If you can hear comments from people of things that they think, that you might be able to incorporate that before you send it on to a business session, perhaps in a third reading that you're hoping is going to be the final one and you get it done and move on to the next thing. So I get that. So anyway, I just wanted to point out that I would really like to see that. I'm going to quickly say one thing that I forgot to put in those comments is you know, you've got the first reading, second reading, third reading. And I realized there was a little bit of confusion when the immunization record things were voted down a couple meetings ago. And then it came back and nobody knew exactly where it fit into the process anymore. So I think maybe there needs to be some edits into the policy, which I didn't include in my notes, but I think that might be a good thing to kind of just provide for that, a way to address that a little more directly. And finally, I did say in my emails to you all that I would like to volunteer to be on a policy review committee that is kind of part of this policy. And so I would like to volunteer to be part of that if you get that together. And I'm out of time.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah. That was good. That's Federal Express.
Yes.
Is that what it is? Right. Who remembers that? Yeah, okay.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Much for
thank
your appreciate yes. it. All right, we are now going to move on to the consent agenda. And can I get a motion to approve items 9.1 through 9.5?
So moved.
Second. All right. Any roll call please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumpiller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olsich?
Aye.
All right, we're going to move on to action items now. And Director Blackham, can you please read the resolution for National Special Services Appreciation Month?
Oh, yeah, I'll get it to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm charged.
Do you want to read it off of this?
Right. Do you want it done? Right?
That's fine.
Elizabeth School District. Resolution to proclaim December 2nd to be National Special Education Day.
Whereas students are at the heart of everything we do, and whereas public education serves all students, including students with special needs, and ensures that students with educational disabilities receive a free, appropriate public education with opportunities to grow, develop, and thrive. And whereas all Elizabeth School District staff devote tremendous energy, expertise, and care working with parents and colleagues to meet individual student needs. And whereas special education teachers provide specialized instruction and programming. And whereas special service providers ensure students requiring mental health, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech, vision, and or hearing services receive appropriate services and accommodations. And whereas nurses and paraprofessionals monitor students requiring assistance with health and safety. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Education of Elizabeth School District proclaims December 2nd to be National Special Education Day. And be it further resolved that the Elizabeth Board of Directors strongly encourages all members of our community to join in this observance, recognizing the dedication and hard work of these individuals. Adopted this 14th day of November, 2022.
Thank you, Greg. All right, can I get a motion to approve the resolution for the National Special Services Appreciation Month?
So moved.
Second.
All right, any discussion? No? All right, roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Brumbiller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right, now we're going to move on to the next one. And we selected Craig because of his English teacher background to read this. But Director Blackham, can you please read the roles of the superintendent, after which I will ask for a motion. I think that's it.
The agreed upon role of the superintendent of the Elizabeth School District. Number one, the superintendent works with others to establish and implements a vision for the district and student learning outcomes. Subpoint one, establish vision and core values. Put vision into action. Analyze student achievement. Create a graduate profile. Evaluate progress towards priorities. Number two, the superintendent supports the Board of Education in the effective governance of the district. Ensures board makes decisions legally, ethically, and transparently. Revises, communicates, and enforces policy. Proposes a budget. Ensures annual audit conducted. Adheres to state and federal requirements. The superintendent represents the school district in all public matters. Engages the community. Reports district progress to the community, including achievement. Communicates consistently and transparently and with the press. Promotes district accomplishments. Submits required reports to state and federal government. Number four, the superintendent is responsible for a high-quality educational workforce. Recommends staffing levels. Attracts high-quality applicants. Recommends individuals for hire. Supervise, supports, and evaluates employees. Provides necessary professional development. Number five, the superintendent is the instructional leader of the district. Defines educational outcomes. Creates a curriculum aligned to state standards. Ensures curriculum taught. Ensures effective instruction. Administers required assessments. The superintendent secures and invests the resources. Secures grants and advocates for resources, establishes and guides work of committees, oversees expenditures to procure, to procure supplies and equipment, collaborates with external entities, creates annual instruction calendar, maintains, effectively uses, and plans for future facilities.
Thank you very much. All right, can I get a motion to approve the agreed upon roles of the superintendent?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yes.
I see something that needs to be changed under number two. Revises, communicates, and enforces policy. Revises should say recommends. We revise the policies.
Recommend revisions?
Yeah, maybe recommend revisions. The superintendent isn't the one who revises policies. We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recommend sounds fine. Yeah.
It's just a
burden. So recommend revisions?
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. To policy? Okay. All right.
Is there an old version of this? Is this something new we're making, or is there...
No, this is from our meeting with...
Right. George. I just didn't know if there was an old version of something this in the district? Yeah. No? Okay.
Because we'll change that. Okay. All right. Good. Good point. All right. Any other discussion or comments? All right. Roll call, please.
So just as a point of order, so the motion... is to approve with the change that was recommended by Director.
All right, so I'll do that again then. So can I get a motion then?
As long as the individual who motioned, individual who seconded agreed to that, then you don't need to get another motion.
Are you guys okay with that?
Yes.
Okay, done. All right, roll call please.
Director Lockham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Grunfeller?
Yes.
Director
Kircher? Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right, can I get a motion to approve the approval of 22-23 student count?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
If any board members have individual questions, please feel free to see me as the data is still embargoed, but I can answer those.
Okay. All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Grunfeller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Moving on to discussion items. We've had an interesting few weeks in trying to kind of put our superintendent search together, and a lot of great ideas from the board members. We all know that we have hired a search firm to conduct our search. And so we're trying to kind of refine and put together the right community surveys, taking a look at job requirements, that kind of thing. So wanted to talk among the board about discussion item one is community survey. So what kinds of things, what are your thoughts around what they, and I, when I say they, it's Tim DeBeers, are the company that we've contracted, put together the survey. What are your comments and feedback on that?
Well, number one, I just feel it's too long.
Okay.
I think in getting people to take surveys, especially so soon after we sent out the other survey, I think if we make it long, I think if we can ultimately be nice for 10 questions. I don't know if we can get it down to that, but if we make it simple, people are more willing to complete it. I think we make it long, people are going to get halfway through distracted, they never finish it. We want to make it as easy as possible. In speaking with Bill, I did like some recommendations that he had provided, some obvious questions that maybe are in there where
we already know the answer.
We already know the answer. Everyone's going to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Why even have it?
I thought that was a good suggestion.
Or rank. I like that idea too.
Yeah, rank. Do ranking.
Order of importance.
So you can take five of those questions into one,
right,
and rank them.
That would help with your concern of survey fatigue that you just expressed.
Right.
I think you could put a number of those questions into one and rank order them, and that would help with your survey fatigue concern.
I would like to get rid of some of the fully agree, disagree, fully disagree. I mean, it's either you agree or you don't. I mean, what is fully agree or fully disagree? I mean, like, or what is just agree based on fully agree? I mean, you're flipping a coin saying, I may not be at this time or this time. I mean, it's just you agree or you don't.
Or unknown. Sometimes.
Or, that, yeah, or in no opinion.
Or undecided or whatever.
Right.
And sometimes that then disqualifies another question on down the road. So those make other questions being asked afterwards complicated.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I think on that related note, some of the questions that we had as far as support for CRT, support for the transgender issues, support for social emotional learning, do we want to delve into that, or do we just, do you want
that? After talking with Bill, I think I kind of came back to what you were talking about, and that is, or Heather, that people are, if you ask the question about CRT, about social emotional learning, about any of that, we know what the answer is going to be, right? In our community, basically, we know that the community's not looking for a superintendent that's going to support critical race theory. We already know that. So I think we just take that out of the survey altogether, all three of them.
Okay.
All three. And just, you know, keep it simple and get to, but then we got to come up with meaty questions, right, that are going to help us tell what the community's thinking about what they're thinking for a superintendent.
And I agree with that completely, Carrie. And just a suggestion, maybe forward-thinking questions instead of things that are kind of out there. You know, what about growth? What about academic achievement? What, you know, and so kind of look forward as opposed to looking back.
Yeah.
So regarding questions such as that, are you thinking about evaluating how much of a concern some of these topics are? Because there is a difference between, and this could impact other questions as well, there is a difference between we may already know the answer, so, but we might not know how much of a concern it is. And so when we think about like enrollment, for example, I think it's safe to say that in the community there's probably conversations happening or concern about enrollment. Is it going to happen too fast? Is it going to happen too slow? Are our facilities capable of handling it? And this could be the same with other topics as well, but just because it's a concern of people's might not mean it's a high concern of people. So you may want to think about questions less from a, is it a concern or is it not a concern? Back to what Director Olson was saying, almost thinking about it as to, okay, well, how much of a concern is it, or how much of a focus should it be? So just my input. So.
And I do have the one question in here that basically, you know, drag and drop to rank the options. And so we have it, you know, we have questions in there on the mental health counseling and the social worker, so people can rank that in their importance. You know, curriculum focused on this or that. One issue.
What question?
What was it?
23, I believe.
Yeah.
Ish.
But one of the questions that kind of I think that we need to change the verbiage on is the ranking of systems or curriculums that focus on social emotional learning. We need to take out the description, because that's guiding the answer.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Okay, so we're going to take that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And so when we remove a lot of that, that'll eliminate a lot of the drop-down questions that we have anyway in there. Because I think when I talked to Tim, he said there were 16 questions, but then if depending on how you answer those questions, it'll drop down to, I think he said, 28 total questions on the survey. So I think we could, if we eliminate those totally, then we won't have that issue. I agree. Yeah.
Well, and I don't want to, like this ranking, I don't want to eliminate it. I just want to take out some of the verbiage.
The description.
Yeah.
Right.
Just we don't stated want to lead. It what it is.
Okay. Yeah, we don't want to lead anybody.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, so they have to do their homework, you know. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right.
You know, the only thing I was going to say is I agree with you 100% in regards to removing the CRT, transgender, and so forth, but I just... Sometimes if you don't bring attention to it or say something about it, does the community feel like we are pushing it under the rug and we're not trying to bring attention to it? Mm-hmm. Like it's not of a concern for us. And I don't want that as a backlash for us. I mean, so I understood about having the questions in, but I don't want it to be to where the community feels like, well, why are they not asking these questions? Because I want them to know where we stand on this, but I just don't want it to be like, well, if we're not talking about it in the survey, then are we not concerned about it? I mean, and I don't want that. I mean, I know, I mean, I feel pretty good in my heart as to what our community feels. I mean, granted, we don't know for sure until a survey were to come out and somebody actually states what they like on something. Hopefully now it's just agree and disagree. Right. But at least, I just don't want them to think that we're not hearing the concerns and not letting people know that we understand. Mm-hmm. That's all I was saying in regards to those questions. I agree on both ends.
So I wonder if there's a way to, in the introduction to the survey, you know, make some kind of a statement. And I don't know if that is actually what they do, but make some kind of a statement about, you know, the general, I got to be careful here, but that set the feel of the board.
Right.
This is kind of where the board's perspective is. And so bring those up somehow in an opening statement prior to starting the survey.
From a survey perspective, I would encourage you to consider something Director Olson said about leading your respondents.
So that would be leading, you think?
I would caution.
Yes. Well, you're the doctor. You're
but you could go back to how much of a concern are these topics to the community? Like, is this a
maybe that would
high
be
level of concern, medium level of concern, low level of concern?
That might be a better way of approaching it with a ranking of how concerned are we with these topics. And they could just be very concerned, or however the ranking goes.
We just list the topics.
Yeah, I mean, it could be CRT.
Maybe that's it.
You could simply ask, please express what level of concern you have with CRT in classrooms. High level of concern, medium level of concern, low level of concern, and just keep it simple like that. And that will provide you with a perspective of the community that I don't want to assume or infer what that would lead towards any discussion with a superintendent search firm. Again, speaking simply from the survey design aspect of things. But I would, from somebody who's created a lot of surveys and done a lot of research, I have to agree with Director Olson that you should be concerned about leading your survey respondents. And I think gaining a level of concern would provide potentially meaningful feedback to a board versus making a statement as to where the board
that's
already
sits. That's a good point.
Okay. Yep.
All right. I know we're trying to limit the number of questions, but what about an open-ended question? What topics have not been covered in this survey that you might want to discuss? Or might want to consider, or might want the superintendent to consider.
I said at the book, I thought there was something at the book.
Yeah, because the it is about the what they're looking for or wanting in the superintendent, right?
Yeah, there's please provide at least two areas of important improvement you would like to see the superintendent bring to Elizabeth School District, two strengths, two weaknesses. And then the 23, please add any additional comments regarding what you believe are necessary attributes, characteristics, and or philosophies needed for a superintendent for Elizabeth School District.
So that last part was more of the nature of the superintendent, but driving it back toward the topics that are out there concerning a district, rather than the superintendent.
You could change the wording of any of those. You just don't want too many open-ended questions.
Right.
People feel like they have to type in something for all of those.
Or
they won't.
It's really hard to sit here and not say things.
I know.
Sorry.
It's hard to sit here and not ask you.
All right.
I think we've got a lot of stuff to go from here, and we'll rework it, and I'll send it out to you guys.
Okay.
And then we'll get it back to Tim, and just tell him, we don't want the cookie cutter Douglas County community survey. So, all right, cool.
And thanks to Kim for compiling that. That's a rough job.
That was
so many
awesome
questions and so many board members. So thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, that was great. I was freezing, so I couldn't. All right, superintendent search job requirements. I think this is something that I'll ask the question. Is this more related to what we put out for in the search? Like, this is what we're looking for specifically in a job description?
Yeah, just a job description.
Okay. All right. And Heather, you had some great comments of what they used as in Douglas County for, mm-hmm. for their search. Very direct questions.
Right.
What other questions or concerns do you have with
I don't like having a doctorate in there because we are going to limit our pool. When people look at a highly preferred or even just preferred, they see that on there and they don't have a doctorate, they're going to be like, nah, they're not going to put in for it. I mean, and we're going to really severely limit our pool. Plus, I don't know of any district that has a doctorate as a preferred.
Douglas County does. I asked him that question. And he said Douglas County says in their job description, highly preferred.
No.
That's what he told me.
Okay. So. Well, I just gave it to you. I pulled it.
Okay.
Yeah. What I sent All right. you guys.
Okay.
And I double checked with Douglas County's board. They do not have that.
But there are 147 schools. We're four.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's...
I disagree, though, that and I'm in the financial services industry, we've always asked for a degree of some kind and is preferred, and that's never really limited the number of applicants. We've gotten them, you know, kind of a full range. That's my experience.
But if there's the possibility, I mean,
you can think in your head, so for you, maybe it is preferred, but not for everybody. So I think it's one of those things, like, we just don't want to limit it. And I mean, I've worked for recruiting firms before, and it's just one of those things you don't put on there unless it is nearly a requirement. And I just don't want to limit it. We want the biggest pool we can pull from. And I think unless there's a specific reason you really want it on there.
That was his recommendation.
Right, okay.
And because he told me, I said, well, Heather mentioned that it's not in Douglas County. He goes, oh, yeah, it's highly preferred is what it says in Douglas. But that's good. Okay. Well, that's good.
I've gone through a few in the last.
Yeah.
It hasn't done
well. Yeah,
right. Maybe it was the
That could be. Okay. Well, I'm either here or there on that.
If we get it, that's great.
Yeah.
It's a bonus. It's icing on the cake.
So what are you guys thinking about when we get the pool of candidates? You know, what do you want the search firm to narrow it down to? I think we need to be, because we can't interview 30 applicants.
Oh,
Well, that's why we did hire them.
So what are you thinking is a good number?
To bring to us?
Yeah.
Two?
No.
Okay. 10,
3 to 5,
7,
I
mean, 5,
I was
yes.
even, I was even thinking
5.
You know, I was even thinking 10.
Thinking 10.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's what they were talking a little bit about is 10, but okay. All right. That makes sense. Because we could spend a lot of time.
Oh, yeah. Anything more than that, I mean.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Okay.
Are we going to put committee of community members, teachers, parents together?
They are doing that.
Oh, they are doing
that. That is part of their whole process, okay. Right? Yeah.
And how are they doing that?
You mean as far as selecting?
Right.
They get they will get the information from the district, the community information. Well, community information they have, the parent information they will get from the district, staff.
I'm just wondering who's picking and choosing.
Well, they'll put it together and they'll come to us for a recommendation,
Okay. I just wonder how they're getting parents' names.
I'll ask that question.
Oh, well, I...
Do you know?
Or even community members.
So, the community members, he said, when I talked to him that one time, he said... hold, please. It was something about talking to the town council about getting the community members and the businesses, and that's where they would get the emails from them for the surveys. And so, and then I know that at the beginning, when I was talking to him at the beginning, he said that he will work with Jason in regards to getting the information out to the school district and to the, all the parents. I don't know about the committee part of it, though, but I do know for the getting it out, the survey out to the community, it'd be going through the town.
Okay. I was just wondering if we're asking people if they, you know, are we sending out a email saying, hey, if you'd like to participate, we're picking
I think that's
that.
What he said they do. That okay. They send out like a blanket email. They want to draw as much interest as possible.
Right. And maybe the same thing for, I mean, it'd be nice to have staff for teachers.
Oh, yeah.
I think they will be.
Okay.
Yeah, they will.
Okay. Oh, yeah. He also said that there'll be some kind of Reiki when it comes back. Is that me?
No.
There'll be something that will come back that on the surveys that we will know if this was a student, if we will know that this was a parent or a teacher, right. Or and right. So forth. So, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But I'll get specific answers to mm-hmm. these. Okay. All right. Very good. Any other comments or about that? I think we have a good path here. All right. Board of Education planning. Our CASB meeting, Colorado Association of School Boards Convention, is December 1st through the 3rd, and I think we're all planning on attending Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Or
yeah, I'm checking out Saturday.
But checking out Saturday. Still yeah, attend. Me too. Me yeah. too.
We
yeah.
also have two students from the high school.
Yes, confirmed. They are confirmed. That's great. Do you know their names?
Kristen, do you remember?
Jamie Glass.
Lincoln Glazebrook.
Glazebrook. Oh. Let's see. I might. Oops.
I can send it to you.
Okay.
And these are both seniors, update. Right?
Which yes. Juniors.
Brady was our alumni from
yeah,
last
no,
year.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. And Brady so was awesome.
Yeah. 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 But just,
you know, I can put it in my name.
Yeah, that was cool. Originally, Jamie's daughter,
yeah,
her son. Couldn't. She couldn't make arrangements to go, so she was able to do it. So nice. Figured out. Because you need the parent, parent.
Right. And then we have a second student.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. And then the next board meeting is December 12th. Will everyone be present for that meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. And there is no executive session. So it is 7:50 and I adjourn this meeting.